I'm reading verses 2 through 12 of chapter 2. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem asking, "Where is the child who has been born king of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising and have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him. And calling together all the chief priests and the scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Well, then Herod secretly called for these magi and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child, and when you have found him, bring me word that I may also go and pay him homage." And when they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother. They knelt down and paid him homage. And then, opening their treasure chests, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. The Lord always blesses the reading of the Holy Scripture. These magi were rather peculiar, let's face it. First of all, nobody quite knows what a magi is. They were people that seemed to be scattered around in the ancient world who observed the stars, and they read different writings, and they talked with people, and they paid attention to nature, and they seemed to have no job, and you can't be a magi today. You can go to school and learn math or music or material engineering, but there's no college in the country where you can go and learn to be a magi, because they're just a little mysterious to us here. We don't really know where they came from. The Bible isn't clear about that. We don't know how many of them there were. Now, granted, in our artwork and in our songs, we say there were three of them, but we don't know that for sure. We don't know whether they were men or women. Now, the translation I read to you, wise men, is actually a mistranslation. All we know is that they were magi. Some say they had to be women because they stopped and asked for directions. And my daughter said, no, they were not women, because think of the gifts they brought to the child. No woman would bring those kind of gifts to a child. They would have brought something more practical than gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So there's a debate on whether they were men or women even. We don't know that. We do know they showed up at the wrong town. They were seeking for a newborn king. They end up in Jerusalem instead of Bethlehem. And it's true, these gifts that they brought were so strange. Who gives a baby frankincense or myrrh? Maybe a little gold, but even the baby doesn't know what to do with the gold at first. So the gifts were strange. They were strange. There's so much we don't know about them. And they are not the only part of this story that's strange. The star is really kind of strange as well. Now, I know a lot of people try to figure out, well, you know, which planets could this have been or whatever that. But read the story, folks. This was strange what was going on, this star. First of all, as the star rose, the Magi, who were from somewhere in the east, that's about all we know, could have been anywhere, the Magi saw the star rising, and they interpret it kind of like an astrologer would. I mean, we don't put much stock in that these days, but they did. They interpreted the rising of this star to mean the rising of a nation that had long been in the dust. So, okay, that's fair enough. They saw the rising of the star, and they determined from the spot of that star in the sky that the nation that was going to be rising from the dust was going to be Israel. So that's why they decided to go to Jerusalem, was to bring their congratulations and to be a part of the celebration there. So that's the first appearance of the star. So they get to Jerusalem, and they find out they're at the wrong place. They check with the Bible scholars. They check with the king. And, oh, yeah, the king in the story. The king's a big problem, isn't he? Because the king loves to be in charge of everything. The king wants to keep the lid on things. The king wants to maintain an aura of secrecy so that nobody else quite knows what's going on. And that way, the king gets to be in total control. So the king was quite alarmed when he heard that there was something happening that he wasn't controlling, like this star that was rising in the sky. Very difficult for kings to control stars. So here's the king, and he's upset because it looks like there's something he's not controlling. The star is out of control, so he wants to get control again. So he tells these magi, he says, now, according to the Bible scholars, King Herod didn't know much about the Bible, but according to the scholars, he'd rounded up this person you're looking for is evidently in the little village of Bethlehem. So go there, find him, and by the way, come back and tell me so I can go and worship him too. And because Herod is determined, he's going to keep in control. But you see, this star is out of control. And also, God in this story seems to refuse to play along with Herod. God is in control in this story. And so between the Magi and the star, these peculiar characters that can't be controlled by Herod, we begin to see God is taking over the story here. And the star, what makes this star so really peculiar is what happens whenever the Magi leave Jerusalem and they start to go to Bethlehem. It's only about 5 miles, and the star guides them from Jerusalem to Bethlehem. And then the star stops right over the house where Jesus is. What star stops over a house? I mean, that's not Pluto, it's not Jupiter, it's not Mars, it's not Venus. There's no star that I know of. This is a God star, because it stops right over the house. And that's how the Magi know that they have arrived at the right place, and they are going to be able to go inside and see the person that they sought. So strange, strange story. Strange people, strange star, strange king, strange stuff going on. Now, when we read something strange in the Bible, I love it when we read something strange in the Bible, because that means I have to roll up my sleeves and go to work. I have to start wrestling with the text. And that's what the Bible challenges us to do, is to wrestle with the text. You know, in the Old Testament, the people of God were called Israel. And Israel literally means, in Hebrew, the people who wrestle with God. And one of the ways that we wrestle with God is we open our holy book. We open our divinely inspired book, and we read something that confuses us. We read something that's peculiar. We read something that challenges us or doesn't make sense to us, and we've got to wrestle with it. We read something that we can't quite understand the meaning of it, and we have to work at it. Now, the way that we wrestle with a biblical text is we figure out how to find its various contexts. Okay, I know I've just turned academic on you here, so hold your eyes open till we get through these next 2 minutes. But in order to understand what the Bible wants us to understand, we have to explore the context of a given passage. When we read something, for instance, this passage of the Magi was originally written in Greek. So I want to know what the context of its original language. What is it saying to me in the original language that it maybe doesn't say in a translation? So understanding the language context. This is a story that was written in first century Palestine while the Roman Empire was almost at its peak. So what do we know about the context of the time? What do we know about the context of the political situation, particularly since Herod makes an appearance here? What do we know about families and the birth of children at that time in history, in that particular culture? So I want to know what the social and historical context of this is. This is a story that appears in the beginning of a wider story that a fellow called Matthew has left us. And Matthew has a magnificent story, 28 chapters long as we count them in our English Bibles. So I want to know, how does this story fit into the context of what Matthew is writing about, of Matthew's larger story? I also know that this story appears in a Bible that has multiple books that has been written over many centuries. How does the biblical context help me understand the meaning of this story? I know that the biblical writers had a marvelous ability to learn literary craft. And when we read the Bible, some writers use poetry, some writers use letters, some writers use apocalyptical styles, some writers use narrative, and they put craft into their narrative. So I want to understand what is the literary context of a text. So to me, I love when I encounter a biblical text that baffles me or where I don't quite understand the meaning of it, because that means I get to wrestle with it. I get to explore all of the contexts of this text to see what it is God is saying to us today in this passage. So in this particular text, as I've probed all of the stuff that I've talked to you about, the thing that was most fascinating to me was a story that happened way back in the Old Testament. It's told in both Isaiah and it's told in 2 Kings. So let me tell you that story, because as I'm trying to figure out what these strange magi and what this strange star means, some light bulbs began to go off as I was reading the Old Testament. So let me tell you the Old Testament story and see if a light bulb goes off in your mind as well. It was a little after 600 BC. So 600 years before Jesus, before this story takes place. And the once great nation of Israel has now been vastly reduced due to war, due to civil war, due to schisms, due to breakoffs, due to blunders of numerous kings, due to people's unfaithfulness to God. The once great kingdom over which David ruled has now shrunk. And it's not even called Israel anymore. It's now called Judah. All it consists of now, around 600 BC, is the city of Jerusalem and some territory surrounding that city. That's all that's left. Now, the temple is still in Jerusalem, and there are walls still around the city of Jerusalem. And the temple still has all the magnificent treasures that Solomon stocked it with. But it's just not what it used to be. And now, if they look to the east, they see the Babylonian army marching toward them. And the Babylonian army Nebuchadnezzar is the king of Babylon at that time. The Babylonian army now surrounds the city, and the people sense their doom. And sure enough, the army attacks. They knock down all the walls of the city. They rampage through the city. They destroy people's homes. They've already destroyed the fields and the outlying areas. And now they approach the temple. And as they approach the temple with their banners waving and their curses and their weapons, it's a frightening moment. Banging on the doors, crashing against the walls, determined to get into the temple, the most special place of the people. And sure enough, they crash through the doors. And they burn down the walls, but before they burn down the walls, they take everything that's inside the temple. They take all the treasures. They are determined to take the treasures of the people and carry them to the east, where those treasures will never be seen again. And in addition to the physical treasures, the golden lampstands, the draperies, the bowls, the incense, the utensils, the wealth that had been stored in the temple. In addition to taking all of that stuff, they are determined as well to take the most capable people and take them off as well. And they take the king, Zedekiah, and they kill all of his sons before his very eyes. And that's the last thing they see, because then they poke his eyes out and they carry him off as well. And what we see happening in 2 Kings, recorded also in Isaiah, is we see the light of the people disappearing to the east. A little strange, because normally we see the light disappearing to the west, don't we, in nature. In nature, the light disappears as the stars go from across the sky, as the planets go across the sky, as the moon settles in the west, as the sun sets in the west. Normally, the light disappears in the west, doesn't it? But in this story, all the light, the spiritual light, all the treasures, all of their treasured people disappear to the east. And then, for 600 years, the people sense that they're sitting in darkness. And when they look east, they think about their treasures lost, and they think about their people that they've lost. And then we go to the New Testament, and Matthew starts by telling us about a bunch of people being born and who begat who and that sort of thing. And so a lot of times we don't like to read Matthew 1 because it's got all those names and many we can't pronounce. And it's got one generation after another generation. But if you look carefully at Matthew 1, you'll notice that a big part of Matthew 1 mentions all that got lost to the east, all that disappeared because the Babylonian army hauled it off. Matthew 1 brings up the subject about the light and the goodness and the treasures and everything disappearing. It's only mentioned in a line. It's not detailed, but everybody knows what that line means when it talks about the exile and the deportation. And then we get to Matthew 2, this story today. And what happens? But suddenly, these strange people start toting treasures back from the east. And people who love God, who are thrilled about what God is about to do in the future, people come from the east with this good news and with this hope. The star comes from the east that was seen in the east, now comes and guides these magi to the Christ child. And I find myself suddenly so excited by this story in Matthew 2. And I think about all the things that we've lost. Sometimes, whether you're a church or whether you're just of a certain age, sometimes you just feel like you've been looted. Sometimes it's not that you're not grateful for what you have, but sometimes you just feel the sadness of what you've lost. And it's not that we don't see light, but it seems like we sure know a lot about darkness, more than we wish we did. And then there's this story that appears in Matthew 2 of a light rising, of treasures being brought to Bethlehem. And people who defy description, they're not following anybody else's rules, who show up. And they bring such joy, and they're so wise, and they're so hopeful in what they offer. I think particularly churches all across our land, churches of medium size like ours, have really struggled for decades. We had things that used to work 30, 40, 50 years ago. And worked well. And then the culture started changing. And we got older. And new churches appeared. And new cultural attractions appeared. All sorts of things happened. And suddenly the formulas, as I mentioned earlier, that worked 40, 50 years ago, they really don't work so well anymore. And we feel the loss, and we feel the loss of our people. This loss in many churches has been going on for decades. And then we get hit with the kind of things that are going on in our political culture in the last several years. Now, I don't care whether you're a Democrat or a Republican. I don't care who you voted for. It doesn't even bother me if you didn't vote. Fine with me. I don't care about that. What I care about as a pastor, as a Christian, is how we've been treating each other. We've lost the treasure of who we are in our country as a people because of this political tribalism. And a church ought to be the one place where we transcend that. And it hasn't been. It's seeped into all of our churches. The political culture has looted us. We have denominational arguments. We have people who are constantly talking of schism. And that's looting our spirits. It's looting our unity. And we have other things that we find. When we think of our church, we're passionate. I could hear from the prayers you've been offering how passionate you are about this church. And as we are passionate about our church, sometimes we maybe go overboard in our passions because we want so bad for our future to be good, for our people to return, for the treasures to be here again. And sometimes we overdo it. We maybe say things to each other or do things we shouldn't do. It's hard to be a church. And then on top of all of this, the pandemic hits us. Talk about feeling looted. Talk about feeling that the light has gone out. There have been over 800,000 people in our country killed, die from the COVID or from some combination of COVID and something else. That's more than died in any war we have ever had, except for World War II. And that time, we at least pulled together as a country. Now we're splintered, and our churches are splintered. And there are things that are important to us that seem to clash with each other. And we're devastated. And I think of 600 BC and all that got carried off and all the people that weren't there anymore and all the emptiness in Jerusalem. But that's not where the story ends. The Bible continues. We get Matthew. And we open up to chapter 2, and a star is rising in the east, declaring that a people are about to rise up from the dust. And we get the Magi, strange as they are, bringing gifts that are different from the ones that were taken. It's not going to be the same. Remember when Jesus was resurrected, they didn't recognize him. It was him, but it wasn't quite the same. It was a collection of treasures, but they weren't exactly the same treasures. It was people coming from the east, but they weren't exactly the same ones who had been deported to the east. And if we want to get with God, we've got to be aware that what is ahead of us, that God is about to give us, is going to be both the same and different than we've had. But you know what? I'm tired of 600 years of darkness, and the COVID has about felt like that. And every time, and I'm tired of 600 years of darkness, and our political climate has kind of felt like that. And I'm tired of 600 years of darkness and the steady struggle of mainline churches to find a formula that works. It feels like 600 years of darkness because for most of us, it's most of our lifetime. I, too, was from the EUB church, not from this one. And it seems like a long time ago. It seems like ancient. It seems like more than 600 years ago sometimes. It's so different. But, friends, I am not discouraged. As long as I'm your pastor, I'm not going to let you be either. And if I start to get down, you're not going to let me get down. There are gifts God has for us. And we're going to talk about those gifts Sunday after Sunday after Sunday. When I'm here in the middle of the week, we're going to talk about those gifts that God has given us. We're going to point them out to each other. We're going to treasure them in our hearts. We're going to use those gifts. And we're going to be blessed by them, and we are going to be a blessing to people who don't even know that they're about to be blessed by the things that are going on in our community. Now, I've already broken one of my New Year's resolutions. What is this? This is only the second. I decided when I got here, I've been thinking about this for weeks. I decided when I get here, I'm going to come straight to the church and I'm going to march around it and pray for it. At first I thought I'd march around it 7 times, but then I remembered the story of Joshua. And on the 7th time, the walls fell in. And I thought, okay, I'm not going to be very popular if I cause the walls to fall in. And then I thought, well, I'll march around it 6 times then. And then I thought, well, 6 is kind of a symbolic number in the Bible for things that are bad. So 5 times. So I decided that was my New Year's resolution, was that I'm going to walk around a church 5 times and pray for it 5 times while I walked around it. And I don't even know if I have to trespass in someone's property to do that. Or I don't know. I haven't really. No, I can walk around it. Okay, I can do that. And so that was my New Year's resolution. was I was going to do that every week when I came here. So last night, I thought, I'm not getting out in this. I am not getting out in this and walking around this church five times. So I've already broken. But I may pick it up again. And maybe you want to try that too. A number of you could do that. Just take some time during the week when nobody's watching and just walk around the church five times. Pray for me, pray for each other, pray for the people of our community. Pray that we will find these treasures that God is providing us. We are God's church. And all we really need to do is see what God has given us. It'll be different. But let's go. Let's do this, okay? Let's sing a song. There's a song in the air, a star in the sky. What is it? The First Noel. Yeah, the First Noel. Let's sing the First Noel. The first verse is about shepherds, but the rest of it is all about that star. So let's sing about the star and the joy that it brings. The First Noel. Stand as we sing.